Robin Miller, this is the final Day at Indy recording we're going to do for a couple of days since we leave today's four-hour practice session. 4 hours, three-and-a-half-hour practice session at Indianapolis. We'll be back on Friday for Carb Day, but for today, May 21st, the Day at Indy podcast, the Marshall Pruitt podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported by our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA. We are watching the final moments. We see that young Cage Serum, as
we
call
him. I like old Cage Serum.
Yes, as we heard Bob Jenkins refer to him on the PA system years ago. Good old Cage Serum is currently fastest with a 226.461. We won't be talking about no-toe speeds because we don't care about those anymore.
No, we don't.
Qualifying is over. Anything stand out to you from the running order that we have here of good old Cage and his Chevy being P1, Ryan Hunter-Reay and his Honda being P2, Chevy is third with Kimball, Rossi is fourth in a Honda, Power is fifth in a Chevy. I mean, it seems more blended than qualifying.
I was just going to say, maybe this is an indicator of the race. Maybe it's not, but at least it looks pretty it's shaken up a little bit, unlike the Fast 9, which was seven Chevys and two Hondas. I don't know. Sebastian Bourdais seemed to think yesterday when we talked to him that it wasn't by any means a hopeless situation, you know, because everybody's car is going to handle it. Once the race starts, he was talking about that if it's warm.
Yeah.
How much of a struggle it might be. The tires go off. So, again, it's going to come down to experience, pit stops, who drives smart and who doesn't, probably.
I know that Seb's concerns were all involved with heat. And as the heat comes up, and it's only about 80 degrees ambient today, but at least humidity-wise, good Lord, it is nasty outside.
So is the humidity worse for the cars or the sun beating down on the track?
The sun beating down on the track for sure.
Yeah. At least it's overcast.
Watery air certainly can't help. But, we did have, it looked like, one mechanic from Zach Veach's team fall out from the heat and humidity today. But we had Robert Wickens as well join the... You're either in the those who haven't hit the wall or those who have hit the wall club.
Those who are about to hit the wall.
Yeah. And he joined that club, unfortunately. What did you think about that crash, Robin? It looked like, well, from his comments, it surprised him, but that didn't look like a lot of fun.
It was a nothing crash until whatever. He just kind of glanced off the wall, so you're thinking, they're going to have to replace the corner. But then as the car's straightening up, you see a little puff of smoke, and it turns straight right, and that's when it did all the damage. So, I mean, they got their work cut out for them. You talked to a couple guys. It didn't get the tub, but it got about everything else, right?
Yeah, that was tubs are in short supply, as we know, so that's a good thing.
Tubs are in short supply?
Yeah, there are. I mean, for what teams have, they will have their road race car, and then they will have, in the case of Schmidt, they'll have their speedway car, and if they had to go to a spare tub, they could and go to Robert's road course car. But it's still not going to be fun. He destroyed the gearbox, destroyed the bell housing. I mean, just...
So what would you have thought if I told you going into qualifying that Jay Howard was going to be the guy that Sam Schmidt's racing program is really dependent on a race day more than anybody else?
Well, I would have cursed at you more than I normally do.
That's right.
I mean, he has been fast this month. He was obviously quick on Saturday.
Doing a good job today.
Yep, quote, bump day. Things didn't quite work out the way that he wanted yesterday in qualifying. You can't get too grumpy, but, I mean, he's P28. But, I mean, Jay is a smart operator. He's obviously working fairly well now in P17 as we get down to the last half hour of practice here. It seems like every year, Robin, there's one team that just has the cartoon anvil locked in on it, and Schmidt with Hinch failing to qualify, and now Wickens being in the wall, that's going to take them a little while to get the car ready. It appears they're the ones this month.
Well, I think Hinch said it best, and we've all said it for a year. I mean, Indy's a cruel place, and Hinch's best quote of the day was, you know, I've survived. I came back from something tougher than this when he almost, bled to death a couple years ago and came back to win the pole. So it's just, you know, things are going well, and you're thinking, well, here's a pole sitter. He might be a candidate for the Fast Nine, and Wickens has been probably one of the great surprises of the last 5 years as far as a rookie coming out of the gate, almost winning his first two races. So I think what we sometimes forget about is that no matter how well prepared you are and how many laps you've had around this place, it is a very humbling experience, and it doesn't play favorites. It really doesn't matter who you are. And we saw that in 1995 when RP missed the show.
You spoke with Dale Coyne on the topic of Hinch, and is he going to be in a car? What's happening there? I think we'd be safe in saying, unless there is some sort of crazy scenario none of us have been able to come up with, the mayor of Hinchtown is going to be a bystander on race day.
You know, and he's been pure class about it. He goes, I understand why these guys don't get out of their car. They work their butt off like Jay Howard to put the deal together and get in the car. And I don't blame him. And Connor Daly's another guy. Put his own money in the thing, for God's sakes. And, you know, the thing of it is everybody wants Hinch in the race. He's fifth in the standings. He's one of the most popular drivers in the series. He's on national television commercials. They got Arrows, one of the best sponsors in IndyCar. So you don't want those people to be disappointed. And you're just hoping, well, if he doesn't put something together and buy his way in, then ABC will be smart enough to put him in the booth and he can wear his Arrow shirt and give his team a little love. But, you know, you just never, because we've been lulled into the fact it was a struggle to get 33 cars last few years, we never even thought about something like this. That's probably the most amazing thing.
The scenarios that I've heard from some fairly smart folks was, Arrows obviously want Hinch in the race, but also understand fair play, right? Didn't make the show, and buying their way in. I also think as a company, I don't know if they would want to be. I didn't get the feeling that they were wanting to be associated with not a driver or team, but just a scenario where you weren't there based on, you know, excellence and merit. And provided that is accurate, good on Arrow, because that says a lot about them. No, if we're going to be on the grid, we deserve to be there because we earned it. Have heard that, you know, we can look for increased signage from Arrow on the other Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports cars. Did spend a little bit of time this morning speaking with Connor Daly while he was waiting to get into his car. And I said, so we're going to be writing about you in the car on carb day, right? In race day, right? And he said, yeah, you know, he said he has no intentions of getting out of the car. You spoke with Dale Coyne. Coyne said he hasn't heard anything from the Schmidt camp for at least a day.
Yeah.
So, again, for the one opportunity that we thought they might be able to get into, sounds like that has the door shut.
Well, I think Dale was doing a little position, too. He said it cost $10 million, and I'm sure if somebody wrote him a check for $750, they'd have a ride. But to Connor's point, it's not really Dale's car. I mean, they leased it from him, but it's Connor and the U.S. Air Force. And they have contracts, and DeMello's done a fine job. He doesn't want to get out. Jay Howard's like, there's no way I'm getting out. Michael Shank said, these people tweeting that Jack Harvey will be the sacrificial lamb are nuts.
He owns that car. And again, I know I'm repeating something that Anders and I went through yesterday on our podcast, but that is a technical alliance with Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports. Sam Schmidt and Rick Peterson have 0% say on anything that happens with Jack Harvey's car. So that's not, there's nothing there. And, I mean, you look down the rest of the list. We already know that a Chevy isn't an option, right? The rules wouldn't allow them to put a Honda in one of those Chevys. So that's really no longer something for them to think about.
Right.
I mean, you look at the Hondas and you go, well, then where would he fit? And I can't find it.
No. And I think we went over the scenarios. Servia's not about to get it. You know, that's not going to happen.
Oh, there's a fun backstory there on why that's never going to happen.
Right. Here's what we need to make clear, though, since we have a lot of readers that listen to your podcast and stuff. I wrote a story yesterday that was not a commentary.
Oh, yes,
it
please.
It was a news story that said, I was calling Bobby Rahal about whether any of their cars were for sale, and then we started talking about, isn't this amazing that Hinchcliffe is out? Gee, this would never happen in NASCAR. They would never. One of their major stars would never miss the Daytona 500 because they have the charter system, as you pointed out, which means if you're a full-time guy, you're assured of being at every race. So writing that story and getting Bob Rahal's quotes and calling Mark Miles and asking Miles, do you think is there going to be a rethink about this? And he said, well, basically, when this thing's over, we'll sit down and
talk about
it. You know, I mean, he didn't say no or yes or, you know, he thought it was a great day.
But the thing we need to make clear, Robin Miller is 100% for restoring the 25-8 rule.
Absolutely.
And all he wants is protected
this is
entries.
What, it's like one guy wrote, like all these people write in and said, I can't believe you're advocating going to a NASCAR thing. And well, I didn't advocate anything. I just asked the question, what do you think?
It's a discussion topic.
Right.
That's
when
what
you
we
lose,
do.
When you lose a star of Hinch's magnitude, that question has to be asked. Well, maybe... You know, nobody in IndyCar thought this was going to happen. He's in national television commercials for Honda, and he's going to miss the biggest race of the year. Now, is that good for IndyCar? No, it's not good for IndyCar. So back to our point and counterpoint a few months ago, I said start all 35 of them. You wouldn't have this problem. And you said, well, we've been bitching about not having qualifying or not having bumping for a long time. Why should guys just be handed a place? And that's right, too. So both argue, I get, like Hinch said, he understands both sides of the argument. He really does. He understands why he'd really like to be in the race. But then you think back to Bobby Rahal, Miller High Life, Miller Brewing didn't buy their way in. Roger Penske and Marlboro didn't buy their way in. They said, you know, we missed the show. We'll take our punishment. We'll be back. So that's, there's a lot to be said for taking the high road like Hinch and Arrows have done.
I also think that this is a pretty big learning moment for the Schmidt team as well. There's been a lot of folks who've offered a lot of criticism about how they managed the last hour of bump day. I've heard it from IndyCar officials to a wide variety of people, and a lot of folks are asking, what happened? Why weren't you on track sooner? Why wasn't there a greater impetus to get out? Don't expect there to be time left at the end. And again, it's real easy to play Monday morning quarterback, but I can tell you this, that if when we come back here next year, there will be no waiting on anything on bump day, pole day, whatever day. I expect that team to be full throttle and trying to get their cars through whenever they have to go out.
Well, yeah, and the key is none of them. It was like Roger Penske's team kind of basically came unglued in 1995. They'd never been in that situation. Obviously, Hinch's team had never been in that situation. So it, you know, you don't ever think about that going into the month of May that, hey, we're going to be scrambling the last half hour just to make the race. You know, when we had Servia on interviewing him the other day, he's like, you know, two people are going to be sent home. And you're thinking at that time, well, you think you might know who it is, but then again, you know, James Davison team's a good example. They pound the wall on Friday, low budget deal, one off only, and you're thinking, well, it's going to be tough for them to ever get back in the. Even be competitive, and he's starting, what, 17th or 19th in the race?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's been a lot of cool stories come out of qualifying this past couple days, and unfortunately for Hinch, whose personality is, I mean, he's become the face of IndyCar.
That's the one thing we talked to him about. If you could fix your personality, Hinch.
Well, he does need to be a little more outgoing. That would be good.
Come out of your shell.
He's a little closed mouth, that's true.
Just annoying.
But hopefully ABC's smart enough to stick him in a booth. I mean, I'm sure there's 400 Arrows people coming here that would love to have him in the hospitality for a while, but he needs to be in the booth too.
Yeah, of the other things that I've heard, there's a plan in place for him to be inside the massive Arrows hospitality suite built inside of Turn 1 and then spend some time in the booth. And, you know, maybe if he does a really good job in the booth on Sunday, maybe ABC will pick him up for future races.
No, I think he'd like to be in the Detroit race. They only have two races left.
Oh,
come
okay.
on now.
You know, let's do our quick commercial here for Bell Racing Helmets, and then we're going to come back and talk about television. This May, the Marshall Pro Podcast is supported by our friends at Bell Racing Helmets USA, proven since 1954. Bell Helmets have been the choice of champions when it comes to state-of-the-art head protection, and Lord knows Robin Miller needs lots of head protection. Designed for professionals and amateur drivers, Bell is synonymous with safety, innovation, performance, and engineering excellence. To learn more about Bell Helmets, visit bellracing.com. So, Robin Miller, you're in the middle of working on your mailbag. We can assume that there are lots of great questions in there, and probably also lots of great comments about the quality of how this weekend's on-track action has been presented on live television. All positive, should I guess? No negative comments at all?
No. You would be, I've tried to temper some of the responses because obviously I work for NBC and they're taking over next year. But
brutal.
Brutal.
It's been...
And a lot of the fans called in and said, why did they stop at a 550? Well, it's the third or fourth year in a row they've stopped at a 550. That's not an excuse. You've had plenty of time. And Hinch, the first thing Hinch said was, don't blame Pippa Mann. Don't blame Graham Rahal. Don't blame Alexander Rossi. They were out there trying, you know, it's our fault.
Here's where things slide off the rails. And it does genuinely make me happy that this is ABC, that ABC is coming to the end of their broadcast contract. Not because we dislike the people at ABC / ESPN, but from a production sensibility. We knew going in there was going to be one day of qualifying weekend that was going to have drama. Wasn't going to be Sunday, Robin. It was going to be Saturday, bump day. They even named it bump day. A little bit of a clue. We also knew that the latter stages of bump day, the last hour, maybe even the last half hour, that would be the place where drama was built in. One journalist took the time to basically do a little timestamp and found that in the last, I believe it was 10 minutes and 30 seconds or so, there were 6.5 minutes of commercials.
Yep.
When all of the nastiest, craziest, heart-pumping out of your chest drama is happening, here's a commercial for pick whatever it is that we're trying to sell you. Really, during the entire broadcast, you're going to kill the one moment, the one stretch of drama for commercials.
Well,
it's brutal.
I think it's the overall lack of effort. It's not from the guys in the booth. I'm not talking about them. It's like they're just kind of going through the motions, and that's what it looks like. And it looks like from the outside. It looks like from the inside. And I think, you know, I was talking to some of the people at NBC, and they're like, God, we hope next year's like that at the last hour because we'll kill them. We'll do a hell of a job, and we will. And, you know, there's some good people on ABC that I don't think they know how to use Jan Bikas, and Jerry Punch has been around forever, and you're like, they can help you tell the story if you're a little concerned about maybe what the content, you know, they're not exactly sure. I mean, Bikas could do a better job of calling the race from the pits than they can from the TV sometime, from the monitors, and he understood that whole scenario.
We love Jan Bikas. That man is phenomenally good at his job.
But, I mean, he knew what was going on in the last 40 minutes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it would have been nice if they just said, let's go down to him, and you explain this to us, because we do that lots of times. Hey, what's the strategy here? What's going to happen? You know, who's going to come in early? Who's not? You know, what's...
Just the amount of folks that have written in, tweeted, you named it, saying, what happened?
Yeah.
You guys have written about, spoken on podcasts about all this crazy drama. We didn't see it.
Yeah, and I mean, think that's
brutal.
I mean, we're going to put a moratorium on anti-ABC letters because we only have so much time in the day to edit them.
I mean, the other thing just to throw out there too, which blows me away, is we're also in the middle of NBA playoffs, and half of those are on ABC / ESPN, and it is just really strange, Robin, to watch that company's treatment of IndyCar and the complete lack of sensibility for drama, excitement, you name it. And then we go home that night, switch on the TV, and another sporting product being broadcast by them. It's the most exciting thing you can imagine. There are factions that get it. I'm just glad that we're about to say farewell to the faction that doesn't. And
evidently they put out a release or something that said, in 2 years, we're going to try and get it back. And I'm like, good luck.
We're going to fight you every step
of
the way.
Good luck. You'll have more people fighting you than you ever imagined.
All right. Well, let's grab a couple of questions from our dear, dear listeners. And then we're going to look to start wandering downstairs, get some video action going on.
Video.
Everyone knows I am a vidiot. Let's see. Kyle Brown says it took 4 minutes from when Hinch arrived in the pits after waving off to when he was pushed into the fast lane to try and run again. What needs to be done that takes 4 minutes? Fuel and tires only. Take 15 seconds during a race. Well, the way things normally work, Kyle, and I'm just giving you maybe a more generic answer, but we're not talking about the team having a full pit setup. That's one thing that they take away during qualifying. So you don't have the crew sitting over the wall ready to go. Bang, bang, tires are done. So if they're going to put on new tires, that's going to take a minute. It's not a really quick orchestrated thing. They're having to do that remotely. Second of all, fuel. They're going to send out the car with just what it needs. to do the warm-up laps and the four timed laps. They're not going to put in any more. So Hinch going out, doing his laps, they come in, decide to want to run again. So we're going to take time to put on fresh tires or whatever set of tires. Then we're going to have to refuel. And that, again, is not the quick refueling probe.
Right.
That is, you know, old-style gas
style.
Pump. And then also you're going to have to set those tire pressures too. Who knows if they're going to want the motor to cool down a little, you know, cool down a little bit. Who knows?
4 minutes is actually pretty quick.
I mean, it is. So those general things, Kyle, would be what what would take that amount of time.
And to finish, and to add to that, was a lot of people were just surprised in the pits that they weren't ready at 5 o'clock to go out and hammer a couple, you know, go out right away and follow Jack Harvey out of the pits and just see what happened. I think that's maybe the biggest question mark.
Michael Rennick asks, what do the pit stop windows look like and who are you putting your money on? Michael, I have not asked any of the strategists yet, since we're in the middle of, you know, really the last funky, real long-term funky practice that we're going to have. So at the end of this, folks will get a better feel for fuel consumption running in a pack in race trim. So going to give me a couple days to get that sorted out. Michael also asked, who are we putting our money on for the race, Robin? Anyone stand out? Or
I was going to pick Castro Neves. I kind of been saying him lately. I think it's going to be a Chevy, and it's going to be tough to bet against a Team Penske car as good as they've been. As you know, four of them are in the top nine. But I mean, you always hate to. I mean, you can never rule out Dixon, and Bourdais's been something else for the last few months. So
I don't know why, but I'm feeling something about Rossi. I know he's got a long way to go after bad qualifying, but that kid's showing himself to be
he'll certainly be motivated.
I mean,
coming back. Hopefully,
right now,
ABC will have a camera on him because he'd be fun to watch. But try not to run each other into the wall here in the last 10 minutes, boys. You know, Elio, he had quick time on Saturday, and I just kept, you know, he didn't. They it fell off yesterday, but I think he's pretty. He's got a lot of fire in him to try and win this thing, and he's funny because he's like, if I win this race, Roger's going to have to put me in the car next year full time. You're like, brother, you're a sports car driver.
Yes, he is. It's an Acura Daytona Pro Cup International.
You already got a sports car ride.
You silly man. Adam Klinger, great question here, Adam. Why does Sebastian Bourdais keep going out with Pippa's front wing today? What else could be so different that they couldn't just adjust his? Well, with the way the wings have been set up for the last couple of years, even this new front wing and end plate with the universal aero kit, Adam, there's two things going on. You not only can adjust the wing angle, right, if you want that up or down, but when you do that with the end plates, since those are mounted, you know, rigidly to the main planes as well, those rotate up and down as you adjust the wings. Well, you don't necessarily always want the end plates to be completely perpendicular, completely flat, you know, above the ground, but you'll find that you're going to want them fairly close. So what you'll have is teams will crank some front wing into the car during practice, then stop, remove the little end caps on the end of the end plates, and loosen the end plate, get out the little angleometer, the digital inclinometer, and level it. Again, it might not be perfectly level to the ground, but something close, depending on what the engineer wants, then locks that down, puts the cap back in place, out goes the car. That takes a couple minutes, at least 3-4 minutes, if not a little bit longer. So what you'll often have with a situation like this is the coin team will say, well, we want to try this front wing angle and then do maybe a back-to-back with a different front wing angle. Well, why waste time during really the last hardcore practice session? So they'll set up Pippa's wing, in this case, with a certain angle they want to try, and they'll have, say, Sebastian's primary and his backup wings with other settings. So it's a lot easier to just unbolt the whole wing, put another one on, and off you go with those three different settings in place. It's just a time-saving thing, knowing that they do indeed want to make the most of the track session that they have. All right. Well, Robin Miller, I think we got one more question here. Victor Rad, TWR Jag. Teams seem to be doing most of their race setup and learning today. Is there really anything left doing on carb day nowadays, apart from final tweaks and maybe a glory run, unless you're really in trouble? I think you nailed it, Victor. I mean, for the most part, this is the day where, holy cow, we've got folks really not respecting one another as they're weaving back and forth.
People are acting like it's two laps to go in the race. It's like,
yes.
Folks, it's Monday. But you know what? To add to his question, carb day, Johnny Parsons was sitting here a minute ago when he was racing. Guys would go out and run a couple install laps and put it in the barn. Now, carb day, guys run hard for 40 minutes. It's like, and especially depending on what the weather's like Thursday, right?
Yeah.
If it's real sunny and humid, then they're going to be out there panning around because today's overcast and not that hot.
Oh, well, it is. It's warm, and at least from what we're looking at for Friday, I think we're going to be seeing something similar. As I say, words with a lot of S's in them.
You're not going by the Indianapolis weather forecast, are you?
Actually, it's looking even hotter and sunny and 88.
So that's what I'm saying. It's going to be sunny in 88, so you know they're going to go out there and pound around and try and figure out, okay, this thing is completely different than it was on Monday.
Exactly. So, you know, again, if today's weather turns out to be virtually identical when we come back on Friday, then, yeah, Victor, I could see, to Robin's point, some teams saying, hey, you know, we really did learn a fair amount. We'll confirm a couple final things we wanted to look at, balance checks. But other than that, we're going to call it a day early. But, you know, at least if it's going to be almost 90 degrees and it's 81 right now and it's crazy humid with overcast, and if it is indeed no overcast and just straight up sun and almost 90 on Friday, you can expect just about every team to be out there for the entire session, because that's a totally different set. No, I shouldn't say totally different, but another step in setup difference that you're going to have to try and figure out. So there's a fair amount we can read into today with this Chevy, Honda, Chevy, Honda, Chevy, Chevy, Honda, 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 Chevy in the Chevy in the top 10. But, I think we're going to see, especially with all the questions we've had, Robin, from drivers about the aero kits. Man, you know, we're maybe feeling vaguely comfortable, but I don't know. That isn't when you try and shorten things. That's when you try and run as many laps as you can to get as smart as you can.
Well, we've had three guys that have run over 100 laps today. Graham Rahal has finally found something. He's finally picked it up, and he was last for a lot of today. Now he's up to 17th. But you've also got Elio's run 107 and Will's run 106. So they take as much as – I mean, it's just kind of a different mindset. Even though in the old kart days there was guys that run 7,000 practice laps in May, or it seemed like, you know, individually, because tires were free and fuel was free. And that's the one thing that's probably changed more than anything in the last few years on carb day is how much running gets done. It's pretty serious.
You know, we'll throw in one more question here, and maybe you can give us some insight as well, Robin. Chad Frankenfield asks, if you could compare the start of the Indy 500 as a fan to anything in the world, what would it be? Is there anything you've seen
a
Daytona
question.
500
no,
start maybe?
No, because, you know, the stock cars come down at 60 miles an hour. The most impressive thing is now they've spaced guys out here in the last 20 years or so. But the thing that took my breath away as a kid in the 50s and 60s and 70s were how close they started, especially if you look at some of the old roadsters. I mean, there's 11 rows of threes that look like they're 150 yards between the whole from front to back, and all this dust flying, and they're right on top of each other. But the actual start of the Indy 500, even though they're a little more spaced out, they in the last 2 years you can watch them. They do wait to accelerate. So there's a lot of cars on the front straightaway, and it's still pretty. There's few people can ever doubt that that's one of probably the most exciting thing they'll see in sports. Nothing takes what the first play of the Super Bowl. No, the first play of the NBA playoffs. No, the first pitch of the World Series. No, there's nothing like the start of the Indy 500.
No, and as someone who's fortunate to have seen the start of many Indy 500s. And many 24 hours of Le Mans, that's the only other thing that I can compare somewhat.
When they had Le Mans start?
Yeah, because there are, I mean, here we have 300,000 plus there. They reckon it's 250. The difference being here, it's concentrated. There you have fans in different parts. But, I mean, I can absolutely agree that here, not only the start of the cars, but the fan reaction, the cheers that go up when you have 300,000 human beings singing together at the same time, screaming. Chad, there is truly nothing. I haven't found it. I have found nothing else that even comes close to this other than sitting next to Robin Miller.
Well,
every
that
day
is
during the
one
month
of the
May
most exciting things.
Hearing a person
known to man.
Who never curses, who's graceful, loving, warm, positive.
If I had a wheel hammer, I would have already beaten my Mac into several hundred pieces, but I don't have a wheel hammer anymore because it was taken away from me because I'm so stupid mechanically. But you knew that.
You were holding the wrong end of the hammer, weren't
you? This is quite true.
All right, well.
Let's go interview some drivers.
Yeah, let's. You know, we got Bourdais pretty good yesterday, but I'm thinking we can do better.
That was very good.
We got to come up with another
one. He's in your car. Bourdais cracked up. He thought that was funny.
Well, we made a Frenchman laugh, so
that's right.
Our good deed for the year is done. All right, well, hey, thank you for listening to the Day at Indy and the Marshall Pruitt podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and with support from Bell Racing Helmets USA. We will speak to you on Friday.